So, good morning, everybody. So, I will present you this research, which is a joint work with Sylvain Pasini. Basically, the goal of this talk is to show that modern keyboard radiate compromising electromagnetic emanations, and that these emissions lead to a full or partial recovery of the keystrokes up to 20 meters. So to do that, I will present you a method called full spectrum acquisition, which is the method used to highlight these compromising emanations. Then I will show you four different sources of information leakage from keyboards. And finally, I will show you how to exploit them in practice, which is quite tough. As a motivation, I have two questions. The first one is why computer keyboards? And in fact, it's quite simple, but keyboard is the main input device between a human and computer. It's the first interface, and it's the first electronic device containing some sensitive data such as password. So it could be interesting to look at the things. The second point is that the security is not a priority. When you buy a keyboard, you firstly look for ergonomic properties of a price. And the third one is concerned security model, especially on cryptography, where computer or keyboards are just a black box. So there is a chance that you will not have specific protections for them. So the second question is why electromagnetic emanations? And the short answer is because all the other compromising emanation has been exploited already. And the first example is during World War II, there is a mixing device, so understand a crypto device called Bell 131B2, which was used to encrypt teletype writer communication during World War II. And a Bell engineer remarked some peaks in a distant oscilloscope when this device was encrypting information. Lately, it was able to recover 75% of a plain text at more than 25 meters. The other point is a famous researcher called Marcus Kuhn, and famous for the CRT and LCD compromising electromagnetic emanations. But I will show you later that he has postulated some attacks on the keyboards. A famous attack is the acoustic emanation attacks on keyboards by Azanov and Agrawal. So it's just the sound of the key which lets you recover the keystrokes remotely. This work has been improved by Zhang Wall and Berger and al. And last year, there was some visual compromising emanation. The idea is to, with a webcam, just to look at the keyboard and recover the keys. But with all the things, as you can see, I missed some. We didn't find any document proving or refuting the possibility to eavesdrop electromagnetic compromising emanation, especially on modern keyboards. A lot of people say it's possible, but we didn't find any proof. So we started to look at this, and when we want to look at this, the best thing is to look at the field. There is other people who works on the electromagnetic emanations, especially EMC, or electromagnetic compatibility. Is the work to be sure that, to analyze that every electronic device will not interfere with other devices. And for that, there is standards, just like FCC, you can see them on a certain radio device. So it's interesting to look at this because a lot of work has been already done. And in this case, they define two kinds of electromagnetic emanations. Conductive through conductive coupling, so it's basically you have to have a wire, a physical support, or radiative coupling, and in this case it's a part, an integral part of the circuit which will act as an antenna and transmit undesired electromagnetic waves. So that's the interesting point for us. But from an attacker's point of view, we can define two kinds of emanations, direct emanations, created by logic states. For instance, when you have a signal starting from 0 volt to 5 volt, you have a rising edge, it will eventually emit electromagnetic waves. So it's direct emanations. And you have indirect emanations, which come from strange things, unintended things, such as carrier signals, modulation, amplitude, frequency, phase. So now the goal is how to detect these compromising emanations. So as well, we look at the EMC, and they basically give two methods. The first one is to use a spectral analyzer. The objective is to highlight carrier signals. So the duration of the carrier must be significant, otherwise you find nothing. In this case, on keyboards, we found nothing. It's quite useless for peak-based signal as well. The other solution is to use a wideband receiver. In this case, you will listen to a specific band, frequency band, with a limited bandwidth. So the objective is to scan the whole bandwidth and to hope to find something. Most of the time, you demodulate the signal both in frequency or amplitude. But this operation may hide some part of the signal. And it's quite a long process to scan the whole frequency range. This is a famous wideband receiver used by Marcus Kuhn to discover the compromising emanations on the LCD and CRT displays. And it respects the famous Tempest standards, which is not known, but at least this thing do the job. Unfortunately, we don't have the money to buy the things, so we firstly used something called the GNU radio. This is a USRP, which stands for Universal Software Radio Peripheral. So basically, you choose a frequency, and with a quite limited bandwidth, 32 MHz, you can have the signal through an USB connection. The interesting part is that you have a library, software library, to parse the data. So it's very interesting, but why not try something different? Why not have the whole spectrum? It's quite trivial, it's quite naive, but at least really very nice, because with only one capture, we can have all the information. So we said, okay, let's try to have an antenna. Just connect the antenna to an analog to digital converter to have the digital signal. We store it on a memory, and then we manage, we do some computation through a computer. So for that, we use the antenna used by the EMC standards. So it's a beconical antenna. And then we use an FPGA with a very fast analog to digital converter. Up to 2 giga samples, but it was not very powerful. Probably the ADC is not very sensitive. And we try other things, and finally, and all oscilloscope were the best thing. He can sample up to 5 gigahertz. So we have a bandwidth of 2.5 gigahertz, and he has quite limited memory, but with a trigger, we can select the interesting part, and then with a protocol called GBIB, you can send it to a computer, which was not a Mac, but a GNU Linux PC. Okay, we try to do that, and the idea is to say, okay, we don't know what we have to find, so let's use our brain and to have a visual representation. So it's basically a short time Fourier transform of something emitted when you press the key E at 5 meters of the keyboard. You can see here the frequency, the time, and then you have the energy of the signal. And you can see some interesting pattern. In fact, you have everything here. Here you have 3 attacks. So I could stop here, and with this picture, you should be able to understand everything. But for us, the idea is, okay, we have a signal, but how to connect, how to bind this signal with the confidential data? Remember the direct emanation, so we will compare the signal with the sensitive signal inside the keyboard. In the case of a PS2 keyboard, you have a bidirectional serial line with clock and data signals. It's when you press the key E. And basically what happens is it's the keyboard who pulls down the clock signal, the data signal, and send this to the computer every time clock signal is down, is low. Then you have an information called a scan code. And this scan code is quite, it starts with a start bit and with an end bit, and there is a checksum bit computation, odd parity bit. And finally, you have the payload, which corresponds to this value, which is equal to E with an American layout keyboard. Okay, now compare the signal. So we have now the signal in the time domain. Let's have a look if there is some correlation. Okay, it looks like there is something. There is peaks. Every time we have a falling edge, we have a peaks. Great. So we have the peaks of both clock and data signals, but that's still something interesting. This signal has been catched with just 1 meter long wire of copper at 5 meters of the keyboard. So this signal could be interesting. We can compare it with the short time Fourier transform, and then you can see that it corresponds to the large impulse bounce, which is completely logic. But there is a problem. The first signal is when you press the key G. The second one is when you press the key E. As you can see, the only difference is a rising edge here, which is before than here. But the falling edges are exactly the same. So we have collisions. So we can look at all the keys, and you can describe this signal as a trace. When we have two peaks, we call it two. When we have one peak, we call it one. So this trace corresponds to 4 keys. We can do a table. Okay, that's fine. It's cool. If you press Q, it's good because it's a unique character. But if you press E, you don't know which one is it. So you can reduce the test space. It can be useful if you are looking for a hash, for a password, online check password. But in practice, it's only a partial recovery process. But we call it the falling edge transition technique. So it's the first one. Basically, the algorithm is to detect these peaks, and then to compare the peaks to a table and to obtain a potential subset of possible values. Okay, fine, but how to avoid these collisions? Is it possible or not? So let's go back to the short time Fourier transform, and as you can see, there is an interesting part here. So why not just filter it to avoid the rest? We filter this zone. And then for the key E, we obtain a new signal. As you can see, the signal-to-noise ratio is much better. And if you look at this, it's not very clear, but there is an encoding of the data signal. Look at the energy of the peak. When they are high, here and here, it corresponds to the signal data. So there, we have a full recovery process, and we can exactly determine which key is pressed. Let's see the example with the colliding keys GE36. And as you can see, the colliding bits are this one and this one in orange. When it's 0 and 1, it's G. When it's 0, 0, it's E. When it's 1 and 0, it's 3. When it's 1, 1, it's 6. Let's have a look to this signal. And then we have both a high and low value. It's always the case first. So we can define a threshold. And we look at the critical bits, which are here. Both are under the threshold. So let's say that we press a E. So we call it the generalized transition technique because we have a full recovery process of the keystrokes. The algorithm is a peak detection, similar to the first technique. Then we identify a subset of keys. Then we compute the threshold. And finally, we measure the critical bits. OK, so now it's quite clear about what we can do with direct emanation. But what about indirect emanations? And for that, there is no method. So that's why to have a visual representation is a good thing, because our brain is quite efficient. If you look at this, okay, we identify this horizontal line, which has large band impulses, but you can see something different here. There is something else. There is vertical lines corresponding to carriers. So we can look at the things. For instance, we can look at this one, the frequency of 124 megahertz. So we can zoom on it. And there you see interesting information. We will try to correlate them with the clock and data signal, especially the data signal, because it's the interesting one. As you can see, it's more clear on this one, on this frequency, on this carrier. Here, there is a hole when data is high, again here, and again here. So according to the amplitude modulation of this carrier, we can have the complete description of the signal data. The interesting point is, what are these carriers? If you look at this, it's harmonics. They have 4 megahertz. The fundamental is at 4 megahertz, and it probably corresponds to the clock of the microcontroller of the keyboard. If you look at this, it's not very clear here, but you have as well a frequency modulation which can give you some information on the status of the signal, clock, and data. Anyway, it's a technique that, which can fully recover the keystrokes remotely. This signal has been catched at 5 meters as well. So we call it the modulation technique. And first, the algorithm is to detect carriers. As you can see, there is harmonic, so you can choose other carriers. If you have jammed signal or whatever, you can select the one you want. And then you only do some demodulation using a software library like the GNU Radio project. Okay, it works on PSU keyboard, but what about USB and wireless keyboard? So we were trying to find something, and we found this signal, continuously emitted. Every time we have this signal when we are close to a keyboard. If you look at this signal, even when you don't have a pressed key, but when you press a key, in this case it's a key C, you have 11 peaks, and then the 12th peaks here is missing, or at least there is a hole. Okay. We don't know why, but at least it can be exploited. For the key H, then you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and the 7th one is missing. Okay, we don't know how why we have the things, but we can do a table, and then we can have subset of keys. So it's a partial recovery only. We have only alphanumerical keys here, but at least you can differentiate some informations. So why? If you dismantle a keyboard, you can see that there is a matrix, endless matrix scan loop, which will check 8 keys at the same time. So it will send here in black, you see the signal to check all these keys here, which are 7U, G, M. There is others. But, and these leads act as an antenna. So when it sends something, you have a peak. So every time you send a signal to a lead, you have a peak. But when a key is pressed, the microcontroller has to create a scan card and send it to the computer, so there will be a delay. And in fact, here you have the delay saying that the 7th peak has been used. So we call it the matrix scan techniques. It works on PS2 keyboards as well, but the other compromising imaginations are more efficient. So the algorithm is to have a peak detection and then to have a trace comparison. So to be fair, when we discovered this attack, we look at old paper and we found 2 lines on a Marcus Kuhn and Russ Anderson paper on 1998, which say that keyboard controller execute an endless key matrix loop, which the sequence of instructions execute depending on the currently pressed key. And they propose a patent to have protected keyboards against these attacks. So we are not the first to discover it, but there was no description of how it works and how it can be exploited. So that's the theory, so it always works, perfect. No, let's see in practice, because it's quite different. Let's define what is a successful attack. It's to recover 95% or more of more than 500 keystrokes from a keyboard at a certain distance from the antenna. So for the first setup, we borrow a semi-anechoic chamber at EPFL. The goal is not to avoid echo. The goal is to have a Faraday cage. So you have a picture here. We can see the antenna here, the keyboard here at 5 meters, put on table at 1 meter high. Let's do some measurement. So it's a signal-to-noise ratio. FETT is for the falling edge transition techniques. As you can see, the signal-to-noise ratio is very high, and at 5 meters, the maximum length of the room, we are always able to detect something useful. This one is in dB, so that's why it's more linear, and this one is the attack matrix scan, which is less efficient than the other one. So we can do some theoretical maximum distance according to 12 keyboards we tested, and for the worst, it's only 10 meters for this attack, up to something like, 17 meters. As you can see, the most interesting attack, the modulation technique, because we have a modulated signal, so it go much faster, much farther. As you can see, the last attack is not very, very, very efficient. Okay, that's the theory. Now, try to look at the office. It's our office to Sylvain and I. And let's try to do it in practice. So as you can see here, okay, it's not very clear, but this is the short time Fourier transform of the signal capture on the office. There, between 88 megahertz and 108 megahertz, you can see the FM radios, which can be easily filtered. And then we don't see that, but I have it on my display. You can see the compromising emanations here, which can be easily exploited. So we did some measurement, and we obtained the things. So nothing more than 10 meters, but at least it works. I remember that the attack is more than 500 pressed keys. So it was a long test to do that. After that, we say, OK, let's try it from the adjacent room. And for that, I have just a small video. This is the oscilloscope with the GNU radio, which is used to do some hardware computation through the FPGAs. And then you have a program which will just try to catch 8 characters. The objective is to stop at 8 characters, to not try to find other things. Then you have this famous antenna, which costs something like $5,000. So it's something that you have to give back to the lab. And there you have me on a chair, wheeling chair, trying to do something interesting. And there you have a keyboard. So to be sure that you don't have conductive coupling, so through the cables, we use an old laptop with batteries, so not connected to anything, to be sure that we are directly having the electromagnetic waves transmitted by this keyboard. So then it's quite a little bit long, but I have to write passwords. So as you can see, I write slowly because you need computation for that. And it's done by the software and takes time. So after that, we improve the things with FPGAs. But at this time, we had to press at least one key every second. But it's just a matter of a computation problem. Then we go back, very slow. We did this 3 times because people can say, hey, goodbye. And we come back, and there you have, okay, it's not very impressive, but as you can see, we first capture the data here. You can see the keystrokes acquired. Then we filter them, and when we try to decode them, and at the end, we have the word password. So now we say, OK, at least we have 10 meters, so it can be useful. We want to obtain a password. It seems completely useless. So let's test at my flat, so in real condition. And then we have a big, big problem. In fact, the attack works everywhere in the building. So even if the keyboard is at the 5th floor and the antenna is in the basement, you can catch all the data for all the attacks. And 20 meters away with floors. So OK, there is something strange, which doesn't happen in the Faraday cage. And in fact, after a certain amount of time displaced the antenna, we saw that the shared ground of the building acts as antenna. And we have no more radiative coupling, but we have both conductive and radiative coupling. So we did some math, very easy, just an addition. Distance between the keyboard and the shared ground plus distance between the shared ground and the antenna must be in the range defined before, previously. And we found something interesting, the water pipes, which is not the shared ground. It's much, much better because there is no connection on it, so it's less polluted. The problem is there is a few people using laptops in the bathroom. So, but it works. And that's all for the things. I have no measurement because it changes every time. I don't know why we had problems. It's very, very hard to have values, so it's just as an example. And you have to know that 20 meters is the maximum distance in the building, so we didn't try to get out, but maybe it could. So this is the work, and I especially thank this person, especially Luca Ballas, who is probably here. I've never seen really, but I really thank him and all this guy. And thank you for your attention.
Yes? Okay. Now, the first use, time, use the First, this is a very wonderful work, and congratulations. And I have a question, you know, just you are talking about eavesdropping a particular user's and keystroke input and just through the keyboard. But think about there are multiple, there are many user and typing at the same times, and just how can you identify a particular user's input?
I'm sorry, I don't understand anything with the echo.
Can you identify a particular user if many are typing?
Yes, that's interesting point. So I didn't spoke with it, but I have some slide, just two slides on it, is to identify different keyboards, that's right?
Yeah.
Yes, that was a very interesting point. And for that, of course, we have a solution. Just a second, with the slide it's easier. Yes, if I do this, no, just. Yes, it was a problem. So the idea is to fingerprint every keyboard. And the clock signal is defined as between 10 kilohertz and 16.1 kilohertz. So it's quite a large range. So every keyboard has different things. And when you have a keyboard, you can look at the space between two clock, the length of the large band impulses, because it depends on the cable of the length of the cable of the keyboards, or the space, the duration between clock and data signals, and it changes with the time. So when a keyboard is hot or not, you have different solutions, and we have 35 keyboards from 12 different models, and we were able to fingerprint them all.
Thank you.
So related to this question, can you detect and distinguish multiple keyboards using these fingerprints? Can you distinguish multiple keyboards being typed on at the same time and identify keystrokes from the different keyboards if they're being used at the same time?
Yes, but technically we are not able to do that because we needed to trigger the signal very fast. And the problem was a technical problem with our oscilloscope to trigger correctly all the keyboards. So we missed some, but technically you can do that. And we are working on a solution without any oscilloscope, very fast memory to have the whole spectrum.
Okay, thanks. Great paper.
I have a question that might be something you guys are working on, but you've gotten this very successful with the keyboard, and now that certain banks have dealt with local keyloggers on the system, they put in the keypads that you have to encode. Have you guys looked at performing this sort of wireless detection with wireless mice as well to try and get XY screen coordinates?
So I'm not sure to understand the question. It's about the wireless keyboard.
Can you use a wireless mouse and get the XY coordinates?
Yeah, so for that, you can have them, at least for PS2 mouses, because you can have the electromagnetic emanations, but we didn't try on USB mouses. We had to filter them, so we removed them, in fact, to not have this kind of information. At least you can do that with PS2 mouse, but for USB, I'm not sure. One other thing about wireless keyboard is that when you press a key, you have a wireless data burst sent, so you can use it as a trigger, and you have much better results. We didn't try to break the cipher on wireless keyboards because most we don't know which they are not described, and for some keyboard there is no security, just 8-bit long password secret key.
Okay. Thanks.
Time for one more question.
Very quickly. So, of course, the interesting question for all of those of us who use keyboards, admittedly not a very large group, is what the countermeasures might be in practice. Did you try doing any things to try to shield keyboards from signal emanations to see if you could frustrate your own techniques? Especially given the cost constraints on keyboard manufacture, one would imagine that any countermeasures that would actually be adopted would have to be very inexpensive.
Yeah, exactly. In fact, we receive a lot of keyboards. People say, OK, I send you 20 keyboards, just test them and say me if they work or not. And the manufacturer of the record say that it will cost too much money. Some of them have solutions compliant with Tempest standards, but it costs at least, the cheaper is $500, the keyboard. And So yes, you have solutions. And
have you tried any specifically in your lab? Did you try out using any?
No, we tried to buy one, but they asked for from Switzerland for NATO code because it's a military product. And after 2 weeks, we abandoned the.
But did you try doing any things though to conventional keyboards just to see if you could frustrate the signal emanations?
Yeah, in the electronic EMC lab, they tried to shield some things and to be clear that in fact, in some keyboard is the shielding which emanate the electromagnetic emanation. So when they add it, it was weaker for them. So it's very very hard. At the end, the conclusion was okay. For this kind of emanation, just try them. Try and look at what happens. And the idea was to not do what they did during FCC tests and the things.
Thank you.
Thank you.